grown up.
"Where's the Dumbos?"
bellowed Jin. He tossed his bag onto a richly upholstered chair, and it slid on the floor, while he threw open a chest big enough for Leo to have lain down flat in, rooting about inside.
"I'll say this for the Lady Governor," murmured Durand,
heels clicking as he crossed the floor and gave the shimmering drapes a stroke.
"She can certainly pick a set of rooms."
He nudged the tall windows open, a warm breeze flowing in, along with the slap of water and the excited Styrian babble of Sipani's evening crowds.
"How many do we have?"
asked Antalp, flicking back that curling forelock as he pulled open a communicating door to another salon full of mirrored luxury.
"Must be five at the least."
Glowood gazed up at the ceiling, which was painted with a lot of smug-looking bastards eating grapes.
"Place is like a palace."
"Like a palace,"
grunted Leo, frowning at two carved cherubs among the gilded moulding. He supposed he was the Lord Governor of Angland and should demand the best of everything. His wife always did. But in truth, luxury made him nervous. Couldn't help thinking what the dogman might have made of it. Shook his head and murmured, "State of this," and given a little grunt of a laugh, most likely. Leo was carved from the same wood. Always felt happier sleeping in hay than on silk, eating with his hands than with silverware, sitting around a campaign campfire than a dining table. He kept worrying he'd blunder into something and break it.
"Here it bloody is!"
Jin had flung back the doors of a vast cabinet to show a collection of spirits big enough for a small but very high-priced tavern.
"Look at this!"
And he rubbed his hands and set to rifling through the bottles. Antalp, meanwhile, had flopped back onto the bed with his arms out wide and a great grin across his face.
"Bloody hell, Leo! I swear you've bagged the one woman in the world who could change my mind about marriage. I mean, sending you off to Sipani to have fun with the boys!"
He barked a disbelieving laugh at the painted ceiling.
"Well, the wedding all happened in such a rush."
"A reckless charge, might you say?" asked Durand, raising one brow.
"They're what I'm known for," said Leo. "No time to give you bastards the send-off you deserve."
He rubbed nervously at his sweaty throat.
"And it won't be all fun."
That caused an awkward silence, glass clinking in the background.
"When are you meeting the great King Japo?" asked Glowood.
"After sundown." Antalp sat up.
"Oops me the wrong way, making nice with one of the Ionian's worst enemies."
And he punched a pillow as if it was King Japo's face.
"You know what Stolichus said about enemies, don't you?" said Durand.
"To kill an enemy is cause for relief," intoned Leo in that pompous way Durand trotted out the quotes. "To make a friend of him is cause for celebration."
"You actually read it? Not a bloody page."
"Can you read?" asked Glowood, slinging a heavy arm around Leo's shoulders.
"I can't," said Jin,
pulling a cork with a thwop and sniffing at the contents.
"And I'm fucking proud of it."
Durand rolled his eyes.
"Can we even find our way to Cardotti's? This bloody city's a warren."
"A baking warren," said Glowood,
sniffing at the damp circle under one armpit.
"Never fear."
Antalp slipped a dog-eared book from inside his jacket.
"I've got Glanorm's famous guide to Sipani, and I can read, when I've nothing better to do."
He unfolded a cumbersome map from the inside cover and squinted at it in some confusion.
"Does it show the landmarks and so on?" asked Glowood.
"Points of historical interest?"
Durand leaned over Antalp's shoulder to turn the map all the way around.
"I have to see the ruins of the aqueduct while I'm here."
"Glanorm doesn't cover any of that shit."
Antalp set his brows waggling.
"Just the brothels, and Cardotti's House of Leisure is first on the fuck list."
Durand rubbed at the bridge of his nose.
"That I have lived to hear the word fuck and list spoken in sequence."
And he walked to the window and out onto the balcony.
"Haven't you bloody poured anything yet?"
grunted Glowood, trying to shoulder Jin out of the way.
They jostled each other, then Jin caught Glarwood's head in a lock, and they started to wrestle, barging into the cabinet and making the bottles rattle. With sorry inevitability, they worked their way down onto the carpet and started to roll about, snapping and grunting.
"Do you yield?" snarled Glarwood. "Fuck yourself," groaned Jin.
Antalp stepped over them and plucked down a bottle, peering at the label. Leo's leg ruled out wrestling, sadly. He followed Juran through the stirring drapes. The sun was sinking towards the hazy maze of roofs, glinting on the water, sending pink and purple and orange flares through the heavens, bringing a hint of silver to the edges of the clouds. Below, outside some tea shop or winery or husk house or whatever it was they had here, a ragged violinist was wending between the tables, trying to saw a few coppers from the masked revellers with some sad little melody. It was sticky hot, but there was a breeze that tasted mostly of spice and adventure and just a little canal rot, stirring the hair about Juran's face. The man simply didn't get any less handsome. That proud, sad, thoughtful expression belonged on some statue from the old empire.
"Beautiful," murmured Leo. "I know you don't think much of Styria, but even you can't deny."
And Juran planted his hands on the pitted parapet and looked out at the sunset.
"It's a hell of a romantic setting. The very place for one last revel before a marriage. The marriage happened already, remember?"
Leo frowned as he turned his wedding ring gently around on his finger.
"Hard to forget."
Things hadn't been quite the same between him and Juran since he came back from Adua, since he came back with Savine. Some spark missing. He'd done nothing wrong, but he felt he'd let Juran down somehow, broken some unspoken promise between them. He looked at Leo now, that earnest, open look that always seemed to catch him right in the heart.
"Are you sure about all this?"
He dropped his voice to a whisper.
"Rebellion."
Leo gave an impatient twitch.
"We've been over it."
1,000 times he'd been over it. He was tired of the arguments.
"I know you're a thinker, but sooner or later a man has to get on and do. Can we trust Isher and the rest? They're not soldiers. They've never fought a battle. That's why they made me the leader. I wish we weren't keeping it from your mother. She could be a hell of an asset. The time comes for a man to leave his mother at home, Durand, along with his doubts."
"I suppose." Leo stepped up to lean on the parapet beside him, close so their shoulders were almost touching. Almost, but with a warm chink of Styrian sky between them.
"Look, King Orso's no soldier either. We'll be taking him by surprise. And when it comes to advice on strategy, I've got you."
And he gave Juran's shoulder a nudge with his and brought a flicker of a smile to his face.
"Couldn't ask for a better man beside me. And lots of allies. Ricker, Stour, who knows, maybe the Styrians too."
He turned to look out across the city.
"If I don't make a bloody mess of it tonight. Come on."
Juran's turn to give Leo a nudge.
"You know you can be charm itself when you want to be. Just flash that smile of yours, and King Japper will be putty in your hands."
Leo grinned in spite of himself, and Juran grinned back.
"That's the one."
A silence then, while the violin played on and a pleasure barge drifted down the grey-green canal below them, masked merrymakers lazing in each other's arms on the upper deck. One of those moments you hope might last forever.
"I need to thank you," said Leo.
The words were hard to find, but he had to try.
"For being such a good friend, so patient and so loyal and... I know I can be a little self-absorbed."
Juran gave a wry snort at that.
"I just hope you know how much I love..."
That word felt oddly dangerous of a sudden, but he couldn't think of another that fitted.
"All of you,"
he added quickly, waving an arm towards the doorway, Jin and Glarwood's growling coming faint from beyond.
"Glarwood's my conscience, and Jin's my courage, and Antalp's my charm... And you're my... awkwardness? I was going to say brains. I know how many disasters you've steered me clear of. Maybe you think I don't notice or I'm not grateful, but, well, I do, and I am. I'm just a lot better at taking credit than giving it, I reckon. You've always been there. He winced. I'm not sure I can say the same. Of course you can.
Juran's eyelashes fluttered as he looked away, as if he was blinking back tears.
Life has leaders and followers. We all know that. I'd follow you into hell, Leo.
And he looked back and reached up, not that far, and put his hand on Leo's shoulder. They'd touched each other 1,000 times. They'd wrestled and sparred and hugged. But there was something different about that touch. More than one old friend supporting another. Far more.
Juran's hand didn't just rest there. It squeezed ever so lightly, and Leo felt a strange need to tilt his head and press his cheek against it.
Take that hand and hold it to his face, to his heart, to his mouth.
Juran was looking him right in the eyes, lips slightly parted. I want to say...
Leo's throat felt suddenly very tight.
Yes. I need to say...
Here you go!
Antout blundered out through the window, wedged a glass into Leo's hand, another into Juran's, spattering wine on the balcony, making them both take an awkward little step apart.
Our boy's all grown up!
And he planted a slobbery kiss on Leo's cheek and ruffled Juran's already ruffled hair and ducked back inside. Now the violinist had seen them, prancing over to the bridge just below their balcony, grinning up and hacking out a jauntier, more martial theme. Beside the winery, two fellows started up a noisy argument. Typical Styrians, all swagger and no action.
Well, said Juran, lifting his glass. To the married man, eh?
And he slugged back his wine, the knobble on his long, slender throat bobbing.
Time comes, we all have to grow up.
He sounded rather bitter about it as he wiped his mouth.
Put our silly dreams aside.
Hi. Leo took a mouthful himself.
Reckon we should get ready. If I make a mess of this, Savine'll bloody kill me.
The spell was broken. The strange moment was gone. Leo had to admit he was relieved. Relieved and crushed, both at once.